and not as no no professional teaching qualification. And it's also, it can also be a problem. They are not qualified teachers, in other words. If they're going to a workshop, they are excellent. They stand in front of learners, disaster. I'm not saying all of them, but I'm just saying now, intervention. It may just be some kind of a Marshall Plan by your department. To say we have seen it as a problem, it's huge. Maybe once, I don't know whether you want to centralize or say for a start, once a province. Because, you see, in the minds of people, this thing of lack of parity of esteem, shall I say, honorable is banner. I mean, what he said is true. I mean, people, by the way, there was a prospectus where they said in one technical college, there was this called technical college, what are entry requirements? You must have failed standard 7. It was there, written. In other words, a requirement is for you to fail. So there are those who still say, those still think it's a situation for people who have failed elsewhere. That's why we are saying, we can't say, if you can't get into high school, go elsewhere. It can't be a destination for people who couldn't make it elsewhere. It causes problems in our mind. So let's build it up. Let's build it up. Let's improve the quality of teacher that we have, so that we can also have a good material that comes out of it. No. Thank you. I'll give Steve to actually respond to some of the agenda. But I think what perhaps we have to take note of, out of the interventions that are there currently, which I cannot say they are enough, there is tremendous improvement, both in terms of the quality of programs that are offered in this specific quality, as well as the pathway, including in NPIL. I think that is quite notable. And also, the underpinning approach, amongst other things, is the question of the articulation in regards to programs that are offered in FCT quality with the programs that are offered at universities as well. And the universities have come on board in opening up training and development for FET College lecturers, including the development of programs. So these improvements in our process that we are seeing are as a result of this kind of collaboration, which I think we need to enhance as a country. Well, the question of perception in regard to what the FET colleges are doing, it is there. And that's why the emphasis on the career guidance and clarifying the importance of vocational education and training in the first instance, and how the system should actually be re-engineered from now going on. Because the anomaly that we are sitting with four university students against one in FET college. This is as a result of a societal perception in regards to FET college. So this one is something that we have to do as a society, as a country, and acknowledging what are the benefits in the system, especially of vocational education and training. The employability, the study that we have conducted, the preliminary results are actually showing that the employability of FET graduates is more than the employability of students that are coming from university. There is that indication now which is showing. It is quite practical. Are we employing them in the department? Yes. There's quite a number of them who are working in the department from FET College. And they are quite competent, I must say. Because in the main, they demonstrated that what they have learned is in actual fact apply that than just a theory. If we are training an HR person and we have employed an HR person from an ethical college and an HR person from a university, you see the difference in the first day in terms of output and effectiveness. So this is a myth in regard to ethical colleges, which has got its own history that we need to work on and change the perception. But Steve will actually add on some other areas and the key questions that I think we need to answer.
Thank you. I'll attempt to give more information on clarity. Let me start with a question that is most pragmatic. College X has now got a group of students. Well, theoretically, that should be on my list. My list here, right down to which level, which number of students, which college, which campus. That's online today. And that number is linked to a funding allocation. Now, once we determine the number that's available against the funding allocation, we communicate to the college, so the communication is, we are able to support the project. So whatever that college is, should have got the people within it. That funding allocation they've reported
infrastructure space is called vital. The issues around the results, yes, there were a number of results that were delayed, but nowhere near the scale of last year. The figure that I was given before we began the monitoring, that was around the, I would say, the 16th, about the 19th of January. I think there's something like 50,000 results that were pending. The report I had of 2 weeks ago, that is now, that is being fully resolved. In fact, the system is now preparing for the supplementary exam. It's unacceptable. It has these problems, but there is substantially less than last year. Our process is underway to make sure that next year we almost have a bunch of zero. So I wish we could look at that as well. And the whole process building up around the controlled examination process. Around the area of the lecture development, which has been the focus of such intense discussion, and rightly so, I think we've got to acknowledge three things. One, the sector historically has drawn its lecturing stock from a certain source, mainly industry and some of the commerce, but mainly, for instance, business studies and life, attending schools and others. Now, as the system has expanded, that pool has become quite a challenge because the economy has grown, things have changed, the salary structures. So yes, we have problems there. Now, how do we deal with them? As the Director General has pointed out, we have a number of programs in place in the professional development, looking at the qualifications, looking at the work placement experience. These are all underway. In addition to this, we've just started the process of working with SACPO to say, identify all the new lecturers and let's work out a criteria of competency based on the UK model. And each one of them must go through that as part of the process while they actually start in a year. So you want targets, 6 months from now, they'll be able to give you more information. We've tried to get it as directed. Because even basic competencies coupled to the knowledge, you should get the results. Now the question is, what's happening with the results? Well, I can't preempt my minister that he has to announce the results, but the results I have at my disposal, as I use them to benchmark targets for the college, have shown between a 10 to 15% increase in pass rate for the NCV, and in some cases, a 50 to 60% pass rate increase in the 4.91. So on our benchmark. The system is responding. Is it enough? And we think not. We need to be better, but it is responding. It is getting better. And where do you see it? If you look at the statistics I gave you on the screen, if you take the number of returning students versus the number of new, it's almost 50-50. That means 40% or more of the students that were in the system are moving on. That's the signal. In terms of the returning students going back to the subject. So it tells us the system is the last question I think I could speak to was the issue around academic support. And does academic support expand to include the issues relating to student governance? Yes, there is a specific program dealing with student governance. Is it enough? Well, in terms of the research I'm currently busy with, we would like to strengthen it. It's something that has to happen. In terms of sport and extracurricular activities, it is on our list. However, we must just make the following point. The system, or the college system, up until 5 years ago, the students that were in that system used to cycle through the system more than once every 2 to 3 years, meaning they didn't come for a year, stay for a year with a year program. They did a 3 month course and then they went off and they came back. The examination happened every 3 months, every 6 months. So the issue around the extracurricular tended to take a bit of a back burner. It's historical, that's where they come from. However, since we focused on more an issue around qualifications and certificates, we're working on keeping the students longer in the system. So the NCV came along. That's a year program. So of course, issues around extracurricular have now become a more important issue. So that is growing with us
see it. I mean, if I go to one of my colleges, they say, hey, come and have a look. We're having a team debate society. So it's not everything in the system that needs to grow strong. So, Jen, I think unless you want to know anything more specific around the professional development side, there's a huge amount of work that's been done to structure the qualifications for these lecturers. I think we've tried to cater for it in three levels in terms of lecture development. One, the basic competencies which we're going to insist in the system to implement and drive through for everybody. And that's college level work. The issue around work placements, development in terms of the technical skills. That's also college level, the targets that they report to. Then you have the professional level, which is the qualifications, the sort of macro development work on a qualification structure. That's my colleague here from Tilton, that calls for HE. And then last but not least is the ongoing drive that the lecturing stock that is coming. We need to look at how we get a newer group of lecturing stock. And there is talk, for instance, of the Technical Vocational Institute and the support from it.
Thank you very much. Let me just point out to you that as a portfolio committee this year, there's so much that we still need to hear. It's worth around the issues of the results. When we hear now, we're running around the field. We've heard the outcry, how much better the results are. Yes, we can say there is a great improvement, but how great is that great improvement? How satisfying? How are we going to make sure that we reach the point where we want to? So there are so many areas that really that we still need to look at. The huge number of repeaters, the cost implications, what is happening around the issues of NSF. So let me say for now, honourable members, can I just pause this presentation by promising that very soon we are going to get a full day session where we sit with the department together with the technology so that we can unpack more and be satisfied.
That's why I would request that the Director General, when he comes back, this full day session, he comes back with this employability output. I'm very interested in this, and also look deeply into firstly higher education and in general.
Okay, yeah, we have noted all the points. We are going to be in discussions with them to what are the things that we are really need them to clarify what they have. Thank you for that. Can I give you 30 minutes for your presentation? Let me say 40 minutes together with the questions and so that we can go to NSF.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. My presentation is going to be brief because some of the issues that we wanted to raise have been first raised by the digital department as made before us. I'll get to the case of the agenda item that has been given to deal with here, which relates to financial exclusions in higher education. But before that, I'll just give a brief background on some of the things that have informed our decision to approach this matter the manner in which we're going to be approaching it today. Firstly, three things that I would like to underscore in relation to admission. The first one is that in terms of the Higher Education Act, universities are required to publish the admission policies and make it available on request. That admission policy will spell out criteria, process to be followed in terms of admission for first entering students, for returning students, and students who would like to transfer from one institution to the next. It also spells out, Chairperson, some of the processes related to pre-registration application, assessment activities, and so on. The second issue I would like to raise is that in terms of our admission processes, the enrollment plan becomes a critical guide and determining factor for the number of students that an institution can admit. That enrollment plan is a compact between the university and the department, and there are all manner of implications around it. Third issue that I would like to underscore is that the demand for access in our universities far exceeds available places. This matter has been raised by the presentation that the DG made earlier. And if I can just give some examples in that regard. The University of Pretoria, for instance, has received something in the order of about 33,982 applications for 9,500 places available in 2012. Swan University of Technology has received 1,746 applications for only 13,096 places available in 2010. Yes, we can argue that some of these students have, or there's a bit of a double count in the number of applications that the student has received. But a major trend that we have been observing over the last 3 years has been that with an increase in the national NSC pass rate, there has indeed been number of applications and available places. That's a third issue that I would like to underscore. In terms of enrollment, we have given in our presentation here some figures. Unfortunately, up to 2010, the total number of students that are currently in our system up to 2010. And we've also given a breakdown of enrollment in each race group. And what we are seeing is that the number of African students has been increasing since 2000. Colored students have been relatively constant across the system since 2000. Indian students, yes, a marginal decline in 2010. And there's been a decline from white students in terms of the number of students that we have in the system. In terms of participation rate, we have seen a slight increase from 2001 from 13.6% to about 17.8%. However, one must indicate that in terms of the national plan for higher education, this target of 20% participation rate hasn't been reached as yet. And we hope that over time that target will be reached in the next few years. And from these numbers, there are some stories that need to be told, honorable members and chairperson. Firstly, there is a low graduate output in our system, which is below the benchmark set in the National Plan for Education. And second, that low graduate output is impacting on the pipeline of students into postgraduate studies. Institutions are challenged there to manage the opposite. While at the same time they need to increase access, they are also required to increase success rates of students that are currently in the system. This is an issue that institutions should be pursuing simultaneously, given the challenge that are alluded to in terms of number of places available. Steady growth is expected in the system in terms of the statement on student enrollment, claiming that the minister has issued. However, we have the view that focus should also be placed on increasing our throughput rates. And we are also saying that the two planned universities in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, although they will make some significant contribution to the system's growth, we don't believe that they will. No, I'm saying that although the two planned universities will indeed be welcomed by the sector, we don't believe that they will make a significant contribution to the system's growth. In part because growth should happen at pre-university level, in our view. If you are to establish those two universities, the two universities should be in a position to absorb a number of students. But at the same time, we have the same view that there should be dedicated focus on the growth of the post-school sector, as it were. Coming to the real issue, Chairperson, the funding of the education system. The funding of the education system is based on four principles. There is one, a principle of sharing of costs. Because institutions generate both public and private benefits, the cost must be shared by government and students and their families. So what we are saying here is that there is a notion that the cost for studies is the responsibility of both government and students themselves. That was actually clarified in the higher education white paper in 1997. Second, institutions have autonomy to determine student fees. They have autonomy to determine what they are able to charge, the fee levels they are able to charge in terms of that particular paper. Government, however, has to identify specific things that it wants to fund and can drive institutions in a particular direction for service delivery purposes. And as we have always been saying, government has been using funding as a steering mechanism in the last few years. The funding of higher education system has been, the system has been funded through four types of grants. Two of them are from government, as you know, then there's a tuition fee, and thirdly, there is private income that universities themselves will generate. Block grants, earmark grants, tuition fees, as we call them. Now, what we have seen, Chairperson, is that the block grants, or the government grants, generally, has been on a steady decline in the last, say, 8 or 9 years. We have seen that decline currently in 2009. That is like the proportion of government grants was sitting at about 41%. And that decline has put pressure on student fees, because universities would also have to generate some form of income in terms of what they're expected to do. And we have seen a steady rise of student fees from 2001 to 2009. 2001 it was about 26%, and in 2009 that figure was sitting at around 31%. And I'm quite certain that in 2010, the same trend will be observed. In terms of private income, we have seen steady or a constant or steady decline, steady increase of private income, sorry. And that increase hasn't made a huge trend in terms of the proportional allocation of both the government grants, student fees, and private income. The proportion of block grants and earmarked transfers to institutions. We have seen a steady rise of earmarked transfers to our institutions and a steady decline of block grants in the last few years. Now, this particular picture then presents some challenges to our institutions in a number of ways. The first challenge is that the decline in state subsidies has, as I've indicated earlier on, has led to an increase in student fees. The second challenge is that students or tuition fee model for institutions has to be crafted in the context of what I would call disparities of income and participation in higher education, managing that particular dichotomy where institutions have to generate some money from students in terms of their fees in the context of the disparities of income from students who are coming into our system. There's also a challenge around inadequate funding of NSFAR. This has been said many a times because the full cost of study or the NSFAR grant does not cover, in all instances, the full cost of study. The fourth challenge is that of managing increasing student debt, which has become an onerous task for most of the institutions, especially historically black institutions. Increasing increasing economic pressures globally and nationally has led to declining revenues for the tertiary income. Universities are not able anymore to generate sufficient income in terms of tertiary, in part because of the decline in or the increasing economic pressures that the country is facing. And as you know, research will always be the one item that private sector will cut down on in the event of economic pressures. The sixth challenge is that of managing the balance between recovery of outstanding debt and interest of students to continue their studies. This has been a general challenge that institutions have faced. And some institutions, depending on their heritage, their location, are generally faced with a weak university business sort of relationship. There is no industrial base for some of our institutions, given their location, and they have therefore not been in a position to generate private income for their own activities. And therefore, they rely heavily on two forms of funding, which is the government funding and also tuition fees. The other challenge relates to the research capacity of some of the universities. Some of the universities do not have the research capacity to be able to generate private income in relation to what they are offering. And there's also lack of developed alumni and fundraising structures in some of our institutions, and generally the absence of a culture of giving in some of our institutions. Now, HISA has taken a particular position on the management of student debt. First, we are saying that students who still owe our institution some money should be permitted to graduate. There's been a position taken on that matter. However, we are saying that they must sign a formal contract to pay their outstanding fees on beginning of employment. Graduation does not mean, however, that they will receive their certificate, because they can only receive their certificate until their debt has been settled. And some institutions have actually been telling us that that is the only lever that they have, because a few days before graduation ceremonies, they are able to recover quite a sizable amount of outstanding debt from students. And universities have committed themselves to providing any employer with a letter confirming that the student has graduated, and also indicate to that employer that such a student does not have, or a resident has yet settled his or her student fees. However, what one must indicate is that most institutions are as human and flexible as possible in credit management, and some have gone to great lengths in accommodating academic reserves. Our institutions, as I've indicated, are in, I think this slide I can see, because I've talked about the issues here. Yes, to cite an example, a small institution such as Rhodes University spent something in the order of about 36 million in 2012. Out of his own coffers to support the students. These are not students who are supported by NSFAS. These are students who are academically deserving, who owe institutions some money, and are being supported by the university to proceed with their studies. And I can assure you that almost all our institutions have been doing the same, and they have got money that they've committed to support these kinds of students. Now, in conclusion, very briefly, Chair, admissions into universities has become a very competitive issue. Yes, institutions are meant to take into account academic merit of applicants and, in some instances, equity imperatives. Funding of higher education system is under pressure as government subsidies decline. And we are saying here that if the college sector fails to expand significantly, this will continue to put undue pressure on our institutions to admit students without the necessary resources and capacity. And fourthly, we are saying that while access imperatives remain relevant, we are also under pressure at our institutions to improve our success rates. And this is where, in our view, emphasis should equally be placed. Our institutions are doing a lot, Chair, on their own to support academically disabled students who are in financial need. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Can we take MSF's presentation? Because I know that most of the questions here we just talk about it. Can NSF present it and take the questions and the discussions after the presentation?
who are appearing before you for the first time. Mr. Ngosinathi Rena is the Chief Executive Officer and is here next to me. Mr. Mshulwa Daka is the new Chief Financial Officer of NSFAS. He's sitting down there. I know that last year, in our last meeting, we promised that we would have the CEO and the CFO. Here you are. I am sure you will get to know both the CEO and the CFO well as they report in the coming months to the standing committee. They will be addressing the question you have posed to us today. Not me. I'm the second officer. And the question you posed to us today as NSFAS is to provide information on the number of students assisted / to be assisted with the NSFAS bursary for 2012 in higher education institutions and FET colleges. We have approached the question by giving you some background on the number of students assisted by NSFAS in 2011 through loans and bursaries at both universities and FET colleges. Against this background, we have given you the best estimate which we are able to provide at this stage of the number of students that NSFAS will be able to assist in 2012. As you are aware, students are currently signing loan agreement forms and bursary statements of particulars. These are being sent to NSFAS at present for processing. I will therefore ask Mr. Khanna to take us through the short presentation and would then welcome the questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable members. Please forgive for my voice. I guess I am coming down the street, but I'll try and raise my voice. I'm going to try and raise my voice. As the chairperson of NSFAS has indicated, we are going to try and tell our story in terms of the numbers, as the question that was posed to us was the question of numbers. We're going to try and relate the numbers in this format. The numbers that of the students that we have said that the chairperson has indicated in 2011 and the numbers that we are projecting for 2012. The numbers that we are projecting for 2012 are informed by the funds that are available. And we will further illustrate that by the numbers or the amount that have been allocated to each university. If I can start on the number of students assisted, used various funding categories. First one being the general allocation from the Department of Higher Education. That's the category that we are going to start off with. We are projecting that we're going to assist 121,991 students in the general funding allocation. The final year, we are projecting that we are going to fund 33,316 students. As teacher and the reference teacher, we are projecting that we are going to fund 4,851. The disability, 1,064. The historic debt relief was the one of funding. So in 2012, we will not have a student that will be funded in that category. Cycle partnership, we are projecting 979. FET quality bursaries on NCV, 184,516. You realize that number has increased quite significantly. On the report 191, the number has also increased significantly to 70,903. The second category that we are looking at of funding, we receive it from the basic education, which is the Funza Mishada Bursary. In that space, we are projecting 8,879. However, we are still awaiting confirmation of that funding from the basic education department. Institutional funding, there has been an indication in previous presentation that the institution provides funding. We have not received any funding in that space from the institution as yet. We also, on the NGO funding, we are projecting that we will assist 290 students. There are other funding sources, both in the public space as well as in the private space. In that space, we are projecting 17,870. If you compare 2011 and 2012, you will realize that there has been quite a significant increase in that space, almost 20%. As I indicated earlier on, that the numbers that we are projecting to assist is informed by the allocation that we have received from various funders in various categories, the similar categories that I have been talking about. General allocation from the Department of Higher Education is 2.4 million. The final year funding, 788,000. Teacher is 101 million. Student with disability is 63 million. The SAICA partnership, 34 million. NCB in the FET college space, it's 1.4 billion. Report 191, 281 million. And the reparation fund, which sometimes we call it the TRC fund, is 5.2 million. The Department of Education, as I indicated earlier on, we haven't received the confirmation, but we are hoping that it will not change from the previous year. We are projecting 452 million in that space. We also have a European Union Foundation space in the Funza Mishada. We are getting 100 million in that space. NSFAS, as you probably are aware, also does re-inject funds from the recovery. We are projecting in that space that we will re-inject 270 million in the final year funding. There is a rollover in the institutional funding of a small amount of about 4.1 million. NGO, the funding in that space is 9.3 million. One of our important funders, the National Skills Fund, we decided to articulate a little bit and not group it under other. We have submitted a proposal to them, and this proposal contains 220 million rand in the SCET scheme, critical and SCET scheme. And the initial TSHA is 74,378,000. Historical debt, 177 million. Post-grad funding, 25 million.
The rural student program, 17.5 million. There's also a special funding of about 40 million that we will be receiving from NSF again. There is also a Ndabamakunu Fundo Bursary, 673,000. Nedbank, 15 million rand. Also, the Eastern Cape provincial government also funds us with 19 million from the Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Has indicated that they fund us with 4 million. The DSD of the Department of Social Development, 103 million. Comité is a very small amount, but we appreciate the contribution, 200,000. We are still awaiting information on the development project. We start with the allocation to the universities and go to the FET colleges. Madam Chair, I'm not sure if you would want me to go through them all as you have given me 15 minutes. But if you indulge me, I will go through them.
Say, or we might just talk to the criteria to how do you allocate an academic institution. Not necessarily going through the
The allocation, and I'm going to start with the FET colleges, the allocation on the FET space, we get it from the department. At the university level, we do the proposal which we send to the department. The criteria that we use, one, we consider the historic disadvantaged universities. We also consider the utilization of the universities and in the previous years, how they have utilized the funds that were given to them. Did they exhaust them or did they return the funds? And those are some of the criteria that we use in the allocation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members, there are two presentations before us. Can we engage ourselves on them, both of them? Just throw in your questions. Between the two statements, to each presentation first. Can I see the indication of hands for those members who want to come up with questions? Honourable Dikobo, Honourable Makube. Honourable Barna, in that order.
Thank you very much. We would like to commend them on the decision that they've taken to say that people should graduate. Should graduate. And it must be very clear, we don't want to encourage defaulting by students. But you can imagine what it means if you meet somebody that you know who has a university. In a village, this person is unemployed, and you say, have you passed? No, I don't know. Why is it that you don't know? I've not received the results. And then, so what's the story? Well, NSFAS wants me, or the institution wants me to pay. Well, you can't pay if you have not passed, if you have not done. So it sort of just became a vicious cycle because finally you are going to write it up like a bet. So we think it's very progressive, but I think it's also our responsibility to encourage people to pay because the more they pay, the more others are going to be assisted. But then, just here, I can just declare that in my discussion with some community members, there is a suspicion I really want them to dispense. That is this thing of too much reliance on student fees. South African students could be sacrificed in favor of non-residents, in favor of foreign students, because foreign students are paid more. People, there are those who think this thing is already there in Japanese. So I don't know, of course there will be further allegation, but maybe as we get enrollment figures with time, we can also see how many, what is the proportion of foreign students. Then we are not suggesting that they should not be there. We are not suggesting that, but we just want to know, because people are talking now. And also the on NSF part is also related. We hear of students after they are paid for by NSF, and then the payment also includes accommodation. They vacate their rooms to go and stay in sheds and informal area and rent their university rooms out. And there's also an allegation that you now have lecturers and other members of staff who are quote unquote benefiting from that arrangement. In other words, renting student rights. And I mean, we have just said the issue of accommodation is a very serious one. Possibly because maybe they have not researched this, they have not checked, we can just get an initial response and maybe get a bit more as time goes on. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Last one.
on e-increment is part of the problem for FedStart that cause institutions to be unstable at the beginning of the year. Earlier on the presentation, the DG said around November, if I'm not mistaken, part of the information that was collected from this industry, regardless of the increment on the receipts and everything. And yes, there will be argument that it cancels the decision for the right to set those fees. But I take it that that cycle to conclude on the fees should be known much earlier so that you can already anticipate what will happen in the community. It will be shocking to us to see this institution, because of the student fees, can't carry on with business and so on. But the other question to it is there a norm around which these institutions can proceed with student fees? We think other institutions relatively quiet every year. But it does not mean that there are no student fees in those institutions, in terms of inflation or whatever. There are fees. But it will be that in other institutions, probably it's so exorbitant that students can't take it. And now they've got reason to then complain or contest around the fees. So I'm saying, is there a norm when you go there, DG, and say, as a department, we want to give you every institution, and they give you this fee, figure. In the event you yourselves as well are not that much satisfied or you realize that it's a bit unreasonable, is there any room for this? Or institutions will then say, no, it's our right, by law we must be taking our students, and they go ahead and do that. And the next thing, there's a lot of damage, what is vandalism, painting of whatever facilities there and so on, and we'll go backwards more than what we do. On a simple matter that's probably, well, it may not be as simple as I want to put it, but on a matter that probably has been constructive engagement and some normalization of the situation found much earlier than at the beginning of the year. Thank you. No, I won't come back. There are institutions that give, they refund students. The students have got some money, some credit within their account by the end of the year. They pay them up to 10,000 or whatever amount that is there. By January, that student does not have money to register. But the institution has just refunded that student the previous 2 months back or a month. There's no logic in that thing. Institutions should be able to keep this money as long as the student is supposed to proceed with studies in the following institution. And it is only when their final year has come and they are not owing anything, that the institution can be able to refund. So then it doesn't make any sense to then accuse the students. Because they can't keep it. Surely they will use the money. And in the next month, they don't have money to register and carry on with the studies. The doctor has a letter to raise that
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think firstly I must say that NFAS throughout NFC is doing a very good job in terms of providing access to students. I'm one of the product of NFAS sitting here today. People must appreciate that kind of work. But we must say that there are challenges, particularly to this issue of monitoring this upfront payment. I still remember in 2005 when we forced the Minister of Education to send letters to institutions on this issue of upfront payment. I'm talking in particular in relation to the students who have just matriculated, who do not know that there is a possibility that we can register and be accepted by institution. We must at least have mechanism, maybe in terms of report, how many students
Ngula culture from his learning, we didn't have access to funds. We came to Nelson Mandela University and were accepted by that university. Because to me, I get confused when I'm watching TV that the student has excelled somewhere. He could not be accepted by the institution, not accepted by this NSFAC. This student has performed this way. But why is the student not accepted and registered in that institution? There must be a mechanism to say to us, at least for monetary institutions, to assist those students. But I must say that NSFAC have been doing a good job, must improve. But I'm getting confused again by this one. They are saying in the page before the last academic deserving student, point 4, that they've noticed that there's been a decline now in funding, in expenditure, in terms of government for education. Now, I get confused again and say again. The dream for a free education, when it comes, if now in terms of government budget, there's been a decline, when are the poor of the poor really going to have access to education? Free access. What we're promised in this country, access to free education. And we must be moving very quickly because promises have been made year by year that we have. Since I was a student, activists have been calling for free education, and it's not coming. It looks like a pipe dream. There's more policy on national health insurance for us. Lastly, you see, Chief, I don't understand. Nelson Mandela called for one single system of education. Even Sansko, Azasko, and many other student activities. But I don't understand in this country, I really do not understand, that you have institutions of higher learning having a different admission requirement, different to the output of the results that we get. 33% pass rate, now you have passed. But the institution of finance, you cannot be accepted by 33%. But you have said, no, you're a good student, you're matriculated. What are we saying? What is it that we're communicating? What is the meaning of a matric qualification in this country? What does it mean? I used to work to accept students when I was still a student leader who tried with a 9% point system. He can't even be accepted to this university, let alone that she came and had a party that she would be doing IT or engineering. Student falls in front of you because she didn't understand. Now, you are telling this thing of admission requirements and the output we have on that. We have to deal with it. You didn't have to pick. The other on engineering, 50 points. The other institution on the other one is 30 points. Now, a unified system of admission requirements, I think we need it in this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the questions. And honorable members, I'm not trying to protect NSFAC and HISA. No, I won't do that. But for today, I want them, if they don't respond to some of the questions the way they wanted to, we must understand that the brief for today is that still the beginning of the year, because they are still coming back to us to do presentations. The brief was, they just need to talk on the phone, just for now, for the rest of the year. But after the program that we had with the committee, we are still coming back to the report broadly on what it is that they are doing. So it's where I just want to sensitize the members. But yes, it's fine. I cannot stop you to ask to dig even further once they are here in front of you. But you are still going to have the chance for today, really, when we look at the brief that we have given them. It's just on the financial aspect of it, to say what were the problems around the issues of registrations, and you know. So I'm not stopping you really to ask those questions. But for me, my question to NSF is that around the issues of production, yes, it has been asked, but can I phrase it on another angle? The way you tell us your projection is per student. If you are going to say you have projected that, I'll just make it an example, projected to assist 200 students, you know. I think for me that is more acceptable, the way you have projected it. But is that what you get when you go to the institution? Then I think that is where we get to the issues of top slicing. What are they? How are you managing that? As to say, indeed, I believe the projection is to fully fund the student in whatever institution, but is that exactly what you are doing? I know there is this notion of more for less and less for more, which one it works. How are we managing the whole situation? Because really, at the end, if we are not managing that, I think it should go back to most of the questions that the members of OSF asked us today. Are we seeing NSFAS assisting the way we want them to assist? We have projected for 200 students. Yes, the institution will say that, no, for what we have, we can try by all means that at least 500 will get a little bit, but how is that managed? Is it bearing the fruit that you want to see being raised by NSFAS funding? I will give you a chance to respond first to the person that reports to you, then NSFAS.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll respond to a few questions and ask Professor Boltman to respond to some. The suspicion that Honorable Nkobe spoke about, it has no basis, because the last time I checked, we have in the system something of about 60,000, just over 60,000 students, international students. And those figures are regulated, and therefore there's really no basis for the suspicion that people are being expressing. And these international students, most of them are also doing postgraduate studies. They are contributing postgraduate programs. And universities have not taken that position at all. Maybe what we should do is to communicate more. Dispel that perception of that name. The second issue around fee increments. The honourable member asked if there is a norm. What DISA has done in response to the challenge around fee increments was to develop a guideline framework for institutions to use in determining tuition fee increases. And there's a process that we have spelled out in terms of what needs to be taken into account, consultation process, and all of that. And that guideline has been signed off by DISA, and all our institutions are meant to take it up with their own council and then be able to follow it in negotiating efficiency increase. And there are various factors that have been taken into account before efficiency could be determined. I don't want to get into the details given your time limitation, but we can share this framework with members. Issues around refunds that you mentioned, that some institutions will refund students towards the end of the year, and beginning of the year they will demand some registration fees and outside payments. Well, I'm not aware of that happening. If you give me a specific case, then I can check and come back. I don't know the type of institution that we're talking about. But certainly, without having all the facts at my disposal, it seems very illogical if that's what is happening. And if you give me some information, we'll be able to chase them up and be able to find out what the rationale is was. On the issue of your case,
can I reserve that question to, yeah, it's both of you, NSFAS, as we are still coming, I'll just give you one example. From the University of Limpopo, where they were given the vouchers and pick and pay, to say the whole town was blocked by the students from the University of Limpopo, so that they can even get people to buy food using these vouchers and get cash. So that's the practical thing that has just can just, yeah.
Oh, okay, the last issue around free education. I'm not sure whether it will, it is something that Peter will have to comment on. If it has to be decided upon just the policy matter. As you know, nothing in our view is free, even though students may not be paid, but someone else has to pay. So there's a specific view that we have around that notion. But for policymakers, we'll be able to respond to that. On one single system of higher education in terms of admissions and other related matters, I would ask Professor Botman to respond to that. The one around the system of one system of higher education, admissions and other things.
Yes, thank you, Chair. We've been involved in the debate and then in the discussions of the department around how we should look at the bigger sector, and I would just like to remind the portfolio committee that in one of its last decisions, there's the idea of having a combined seminar with DISA on the academic landscape. And I think that is something that we should move towards and see if we can get dates around it so that we have that serious debate. And I think the focus on the academic question, not just on the management questions of the academic, is I think something that is at stake now that we should look at, because it boils down to the question of the quality issue. It is. We are concerned about a student's matric, the quality of the matric pass. So you have to look at that. You have to be very careful, because if you don't do that, you simply put a whole family in debt. That's all you do. So you have to be. That is an important part of the admissions debate that we have at TESA. And then on the other hand, we must worry about students that are in the system that are building up debt. And ask ourselves the question, it is important. A person can actually build up debt that you cannot repay in your lifetime. So how do you secure that you look at what is fair treatment to a person who now actually just wants a degree at all costs, and at the end we find out that it has been far too expensive? If we will have to continue to look at this balance between the decrease in government spending, I'm more concerned, and it is in the presentation, very much more concerned with those universities that do not have strong ties with business and with the private sector. They suffer the most in this whole process, and they suffer because they can't go the third stream income of their universities, and it is something that we should look at. It is there is a challenge for universities that there with these strong private sector relationships, when the economy goes down, then they feel it as well. So in this period of time, that growth is also under pressure on the third stream. But I'm more concerned about those universities with those strong business and public ties. When will we have free education? I think when we get better giving back. If every one of us who gets an education gives back so that another person can study, will make life easier for many universities in this country. We forget that we didn't study for we forget that it appears that we have studied for free, but somebody else paid for it anyway. And all we need to do is say, if we do the same, then somebody else will have the feeling that it is for free, but in fact somebody paid, and then that person will learn to give back to the next generation, maybe. But it is going to be a cost factor for somebody to pick up. I just want to say one more thing, Chair. See, when we have the discussion on the academic landscape, I think it will be important to link it back to the President's address on the State of the Nation on the knowledge economy. We ask all these questions and they are important, but the question is, are we actually driving the knowledge economy or not? Because we're putting a lot of money into education, but what it must do is provide the jobs and provide the jobs for the next generation that will be knowledge workers, and how do we secure that we do that as well? And I'm looking forward to that discussion about the academic landscape. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just want to assure you that discussion that we discussed about.
With regard to fraudulent activities, I think we have to investigate on those fraudulent activities. Is NFL plan to engage with the institution and come up with a plan as to how we can curb some of these fraudulent activities? But we certainly have to look into them and come up with a plan as to how we can mitigate them. With regard to the students that are dropping out, in terms of NSF rules, students are allowed to be within the system for at least a period of about 5 years, which we normally call N+2. However, within NSF rules as well, if a student has not performed well to an extent that we cannot support for that particular year or that semester, the student is given an opportunity to improve his or her results in that semester and can apply for NSF assistance in the next semester. Those are the prevailing rules at the moment, and they might not be acceptable, but we need to encourage the students to perform well in the process as well. On the question of the refund, in terms of NSF rules, no students are supposed to be given refunds at the end of the year. All those refunds, if there are certain funds that have not been utilized by a student, they need to come back to the NSF and be credited in that student's account, and also the fee becomes available for reutilization going forward. We have an agreement.
How
what is the policy?
How
would that policy just expand on that? If a student has applied, say, for example, 50,000 loans, and in the process the student gets a bursary of 20,000 rand, we initially approve the 50,000. That 20,000 that is left is supposed to be coming back to NSF, and it will be credited to that student's account. It is not supposed to be given to that student. I hope it is clear. On the issue of upfront payment, we have an in-principle agreement with the university that they can claim up to 30% of their allocated funds to try and deal with the issue that students are not stranded from an accommodation point of view. They are also allowed to register. There are other institutions that will pre-assess the student, and if the student they see that the student is going to be eligible for NSF funding, they do not preclude the student from registering. However, there are inconsistencies in that school, and I think it's an issue that needs to be addressed. We have received a list of 7 institutions, and I think 7 universities and 2 FET colleges that this year that applied for upfront payment. and we have granted them upfront payments as well, in order to alleviate the problem of students not being able to register. So from an NSF point of view, we have an agreement with the institution, and we are assisting them in that regard. Of course, to the benefit of the students. On the issue of the projection, we project on the basis of all the existing practices, and including the fact that the money gets spread at the university. And the universities, they use this in the absence of sufficient funds, they try to spread the available funds. And I think it's an issue that needs to be dealt with at the policy level. And I can safely say the DG has invited NSF that we must come and engage on the policy issue. And I'm hoping that maybe by the time we come back to you, we would have had an opportunity with the department to engage on some of these policy issues, and we could even appreciate if there could be input from yourself as well. The pricing one, I'll leave it for the DG, because I think it is not to the pricing of the how the institution price for fees.
For the DG. First of all, I want to thank you, honorable members, for telling us that we're doing a very good work. I think we can do more. Going forward, Chairperson, I think central to NSFAS in dealing with these numbers that you asked for projects, we focus on the issue of access, progress, and success. We have not forgotten about the student centered model, and we are going fast to that direction as the organization. And I therefore want to say that it is not we don't have problems. The money can be spread, but we are also worried that at the end of the day, the student don't get full amount until such time we clear our processes in terms of this student-centered model. I think NSFAS can do more. We might be doing good, but we can do more.
DJ, before I come to you, I will allow the quick follow-up, please.
Thank you.
Start all
Members, thank you very much for the good deliberation, the questions that you have come up with.